Empower Radio presents The Butterfly Moment. It's the classic quantum leap in personal growth. Now here are your hosts for The Butterfly Moment, John Shelter and Carrie Hall on Empower Radio.
John Shelter, and thank you so much for listening to our shows. We've been getting some really great feedback on the guests that we've had in the past and in some of our lineup in the future. It's just such a privilege and an honor to really take this opportunity to give back to Detroit. I was telling our guests prior to going on, there's so many wonderful things that are happening in terms of the growth and the renaissance of Detroit, Metro Detroit, Michigan, and to put the spotlight on some of them and just really acknowledge them for the superior work that they're doing is really an honor. And our guest today, we'll get him on just a little bit later, is a friend of mine and a professional acquaintance, a guy named RJ King, who's just, he's the writer's writer. And I will talk more about him, but I've dabbled in this as a screenplay writer. Of course, in law, you're always writing things, but he takes the cake. He is the definitive writer that really knows how to put together interesting articles that not only are interesting to read, but stimulate the topic. My name is John Shelter, and I'm a life coach. I specialize in high-end professional clients that want to increase their performance. And we have come up with something called the Butterfly Moment. I just finished, I was telling our guest, RJ, my book called The Way of the Butterfly Warrior. And the butterfly, I think, has achieved a great, great example of transformation, of growth, of becoming more, which is what life coaching or professional coaching is all about. So if you would like a free session to professional high-end life coaching, call me at 248-568-7021 in 55 minutes. We will talk to you about your goals and maybe business of high performance objectives and see what we can do to lay out a plan and to allow you to achieve all of your goals. Coaching is just such a wonderful thing that I've experienced. Gary Ryan Blair, the famous author and writer, is my life coach, professional coach. And it's a wave of the future. And I've been blessed with an opportunity to do this, and I just live and breathe this stuff. Well, I want to get right to our guest because he's such a wonderful guy. And I know that you're going to enjoy and be inspired by what he has to say. He has his fingers on the pulse of what's going on. His name is RJ King. He's editor of D Business Magazine and D Business Daily News. The magazine is also a daily e-newsletter covering businesses and organizations in Metro Detroit and Michigan, and are expanding locally, nationally, and internationally. We're living in a global world, my friend. And from 2011 to 2016, D Business Magazine has been awarded more than 20 gold and silver medals in the Editorial Excellence Awards from the Alliance of the Area Business Publications, including being named the top regional business magazine in the country in 2011. Prior to joining and launching D Business in 2006, Mr. King was a business writer for Detroit News for 16 years, where he wrote more than, get this, 4,000 articles covering economic development, automotive, healthcare, technology, and transportation. Mr. King is the author of two books, Passport to the Corner Office, I got to ask him about that, and 8-Track, which I also am very curious about, the first mobile app. Mr. King is on the board member of Beyond Basics, Detroit Aircraft Corporation, AeroSpaceX, Detroit Spacecraft Company, Brazen Sports, and Asian Pacific American Chamber of Commerce. and on the Brother Rice Business Alliances. In addition, he serves as Board of Trustees at the Parade Company. He's also a member of the Detroit Athletic Club, and in 2017-18, Chairman of the Detroit Athletic Club Executive Club. He's also is a member of the Boston Edison Historical District and the University of Michigan Alumni Association. RJ, how are you doing tonight?
Very good. Thank you for having me on, John.
Great, great. Well, you know, thank you for agreeing to be on. What I'd like to do, I've read your background, and it's so impressive. Can you tell me a little bit more about yourself? I mean, are you from the Michigan area? You know, where did you grow up?
I grew up in the suburbs of Detroit in Bloomfield Village, and Irish Catholic family.
Uh-huh.
I have six sisters, two brothers. Was the ultimate middle child with three sisters and a brother older and three sisters and a brother younger. Hmm. Two wonderful parents. All the kids, we got through college, and now there's 23 nieces and nephews.
Hmm.
And my father worked for Ford Motor Company. He was hired in January of 65 as the project engineer for the introduction of the 8-track tape player,
mm-hmm.
hence the one book. And he, you know, Ford was the very first one to offer the 8-track tape player. It was invented by Bill Lear from the Lear Jet fame. He saw an automotive play. His Rolodex was pretty extensive, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So he called up Henry Ford II, who was chairman of Ford at the time, and asked if Ford would be interested in having the 8-track tape player in their vehicles. He said yes. And so to get the music, none of the record companies wanted to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill Lear was very good friends with the head of RCA Records. And so they got 175 albums. Motorola built the combined 8-track tape player AM radio. It came out in October of 65 on six different models, a Lincoln, a Mercury, and four Fords. And they sold 125,000 units in the first year. It was a major hit. So my dad shepherded that all through, wrote the specs.
Wow.
Made sure everybody stuck to the specs. And then, you know, 3 months later, in January of 66, Chrysler took a Lear unit and offered that as an option. And then GM came on a year later. AMC offered it. Volkswagen offered it. Got into the homes. And by 1970, it was a billion-dollar industry. And so I had a 15-year run or so before the cassette tapes took over.
Wow. That's great.
So I had an interaction. I had interactions with executives at Ford Motor Company and their spouses early childhood growing up in the 70s. And so my brother and I would be downstairs during the work parties serving up drinks. And so that's kind of how it all got started.
You know, it's fascinating to me amongst the brotherhood of writers. How did you get into writing? How did you know that this was going to be, you know, your life task, your thing?
Well, about the best thing I was good at in high school and college was writing. Was getting, you know, pretty much mostly A's.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't so good at math or science. But so during college, I started freelancing with the local metro papers like the Royal Oak Tribune at the time, Observer and Eccentric newspapers, the Detroiter magazine that Detroit Regional Chamber puts out, and several others. And so that was a great experience. And by the time I got to the Detroit News, I had graduated from University of Michigan Dearborn with an English degree. And literally that summer of 1990, I met Luther Keith, who was the business editor of the Detroit News. I was living on Forest Avenue between 2nd and 3rd, just south of Wayne State University, with a couple of buddies, and we would throw two or three big parties a year. Luther was one of the bands that that came in and played. So I asked if they were hiring afterward, and he said no. And so I convinced him to just do a freelance article for him. If they liked it, they could print it. If not, then no big deal. So it was about one of the, he assigned it to me. It was about one of the first residential golf housing developments in, it was out in Northville. And a couple weeks later, they printed it. It was on the front of the business section of the Detroit News. So that probably, well, it was a butterfly moment. And, you know, I stayed in touch. And like 3 weeks later, he called back and he said, well, we have an opening if you'd like to come in and write for us. And I was like, sure. And I just like came in and started writing, you know, business stories. So I sort of skipped over. Usually a writer will come in and work for the city desk and write obituaries. And,
right.
And attend city council meetings late into the night and things like that. So I was very, very fortunate to get that opportunity and just ran with it. And so the first couple of years, I just did general assignments. They would, you know, go have you cover something in the healthcare field or something in, you know, technology or, of course, automotive or one of the suppliers, or retailer, housing project. And so you learn a lot. And then a couple of years of automotive and
wow,
traveled the world doing that. And then in 95, I took over what was the real estate beat. And that evolved into economic development. So it was all the real estate markets. So it was housing, office, industrial, hospitality, restaurants. And so, you know, the region was expanding quite rapidly at that time. So it became a matter of, you know, once you did one story and people could see that you had the right contacts in there, and that, you know, they could trust you. I mean, that was the biggest thing, was trust. Because
right,
if your sources don't trust you, or you allow them to be exposed, or you print something that you told somebody you weren't going to print, that's pretty much the kiss of death.
Well, you must have wonderful, wonderful relationships with businesses in Detroit, because of 4,000 articles, you know, people... Yeah, I've written a lot of screenplays, and you know, when Carrie and I were in Los Angeles, people would come up to me and say that, you know, how do you become a screenwriter? And I would always say that writers write, and you have done that, and you have earned your keep for 16 years at the Detroit News, writing 4,000 articles. How does that come about? Just being interested in what's going on, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, the journalism is a field where you keep on learning, but you get paid for it. So it's like you're still going to school, and you're writing these papers about people and places that you meet or visit. And early on at the news, when, you know, when the newspaper was much, much bigger, we had probably 12 or 14 reporters, business staff alone. And so you would meet at 10:30 every morning and go over what you had for either the next day or the day following in terms of stories on your beat. And then you would come together at 3 o'clock to see, were you able to get that, or does it have to hold a day? Because they obviously need to plan out the page for the next day. And then Sunday assignments were always nice, because it was the combined News Free Press in those days. So they were reaching, you know, 1.3 million readers in those days.
Right.
So they started talking about a story about the Rouge factory and in Dearborn, the Ford Rouge plant, and they were getting rumblings about something going on over there. So I was still living at home at the time, and so I ran it by my dad, and he says, well, you know, you know some people over there. Why don't you call, I can't really say who, but why don't you call so-and-so and see what he has to say? And so I did, and so I went over literally to his office the next day, and he laid out that Ford was going to spend $2 billion transforming the Rouge into this, you know, industrial green oasis with the green roof and everything, and gave me the press release that they were going to put out the next day. So brought it back. Obviously, my editors were very pleased, and they ran it on the front page the next day. And, you know, about 5 o'clock, my editor made a courtesy call to Ford PR, and the lady that answered was adamant that we not print it. It wasn't true. And he just kind of laughed at her and says, well, you know, we got your press release right here. It's dated for tomorrow.
Wow.
And, you know, so she said, you know, do what you have to do. But, of course, it was true. And, you know, once you have a story like that, people, you know, people are able to connect the dots. And I never did, you know, I did interview somebody for Ford for the story that my contact suggested that I actually brought him into the office when I was there. So I was able to quote a person from Ford, which really helped the story. But I never let anybody know, you know, who gave me that story. And so once people know that, again, it gets back to the trust factor, that you can be trusted, because there's so many sensitivities in some of these stories, as you put them together, that it just, you know, slowly snowballed from there. And toward the end, it was like I had so many stories with all these contacts I had made, and that I, and sometimes was just handing them off to other reporters because I just didn't have time to do it.
Yeah, one thing that I've noticed, and Carrie often, my wife Carrie, who does photography for Our Magazine, sees you and often comments that you're one of the hardest working editors and writers that she's ever seen, because you really go out to the events and talk to the people, network, because that's how you get stories, right? That's how you make those kind of magical connections that turn into writing.
Right. Yeah, like John Pepper, who was former business columnist for the Detroit News and was my mentor, he says, you know, you're not going to get any stories sitting in your cubicle.
Yeah.
You got to go out and get them.
Well, Mark, so, go ahead.
That was the best way to do it, especially when you go to, you know, a grand opening or a charity event. People are in a probably less guarded moment, and you know, you just strike up a conversation and chat calmly with them, and a lot of times they need you know, a few weeks or even a few months or even a year or so to put a deal together. So I was very good at just saying, well, when can I call you back?
Yeah.
An update. And then you just put that in those days, you just put it in your planner and just make sure to call them back on, you know, March 1st and see where they're at. And then 99 times out of 100, that worked just worked fine.
Well, you must be very proud, because D Business is one of the most respected, you know, business publications in the Detroit area. And you have really, through your being editor of that magazine, have upped the bar in terms of it. You know, and I have to ask two questions. I want you to answer them. Time's going by quickly. I want to ask about your butterfly moment. You mentioned a little bit, and I'm sure the last question is going to be, what's the future for Detroit businesses? So the butterfly moment, my friend.
Well, it'd be two things. One, my first story that I ever was published was with the Royal Love Tribune. It was at the front page. And it helped that it was a story about Sports Illustrated coming to town in those days for their swimsuit edition, and it was Al McPherson, so it wasn't too hard to get that one on the front page, I guess, from my editor's perspective. And then secondly, was that Ford Rouge story that, you know, was, you know, that's a global Fortune 500 company, and you're breaking a story off of, you know, beat reporters that spend day after day.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing that. So, you know, those two things.
You had that feeling. I can do this. Well, great. And also, having your fingers on the pulse of what's going on in Detroit, I imagine that you're very encouraged.
Yes. This is the greatest, you know, renaissance that I've ever seen. There's been fits and starts over the years. Certainly, Roger Penske laid a lot of groundwork, you know, invested a lot of time and money to get the city prepared for the 2006 Super Bowl. And so, you know, General Motors moved downtown from New Center in 2006 with another bold move, Peter Karmanos. And then that all helped bring, of course, the Illich family in the late 80s. And that all helped to bring Dan Gilbert down in 2010. And, you know, they've gone from 2,500 workers to north of 17,000 now, and have acquired 90 different properties. Some highlights that are coming, you know, Little Caesars Arena just opened.
And
now you have this 50 block area around it called the District Detroit. So there's going to be a lot of development coming there. You have a lot of available land. Certainly the Hudson site is going to break ground this Friday, December 1st. You got the Book Tower, which just was a relic that's now being renovated by Gilbert. You've got land east of the Renaissance Center that'll be developed by General Motors and Gilbert. And then you have the possibility of getting Amazon for their
That is very exciting.
American headquarters. So I think we've got a pretty good shot there. I mean, we've already gotten 4,200 jobs from them in the last year and a half, just on distribution and sortation centers. And
we've
got 300 workers, corporate office downtown that is 300 workers, and that's going to go to 600. So in some respects, we've already kind of won a portion of the Amazon stuff, but it would be nice to get the big one.
Sure. So having reported, you know, other businesses, what's your dream? Where should we be seeing that you'll be going in the future in terms of the magazine, in terms of your own career? We got about 3 minutes left, RJ, and I can't wait to hear.
Well, we've been fortunate. You know, we started up D-Business in 2006, and Our Media is our parent company, and under there is Our Detroit, D-Business, Detroit Home. We have 70 magazines around the country, 300 titles, which are specialty publications for companies and organizations. And, you know, we're going to continue to grow the media. There's sectors of the media that are alive and well, and it's not an easy business, a lot of moving parts. But we see a very good future in Detroit, in Metro Detroit, in Michigan. I think Governor Schneider and the legislature have really worked hard to redo the tax climate here for the betterment of all, and we've seen the state move up rankings in terms of business activities and their tax climate, and I think that'll bode well for the future. And as far as that Amazon application that was submitted, you know, that's a template for luring any other major corporation around the world. And I think that's even more exciting. If we get Amazon, that would be wonderful. But if we don't, we've got a great plan to attract other major corporations and organizations around the world. I wish we had time to get into why Detroit is so unique in terms of the auto industry and how that led to lots and lots. I mean, just thousands of small businesses here.
You know, with all, we've got about a minute left. With all your knowledge of Detroit and business and everything like that, can you tell us how we're going to get the Lions back into the playoffs or the Super Bowl?
Well, I think they're slowly becoming a better team.
Yeah, they are.
You know, they've got to, you know, unfortunately they have some injuries, but everybody deals with that. But they've got to, you know, keep getting the best players they can on the offensive line and defensive line, and they will get better.
I love it. I love it. You've got advice just like it's a business. For RJ King, we are delighted to have you on the show, and you know, you've warmed our hearts with the future of this beautiful city. We want to thank you for your dedication, because it's my belief that when you focus on things, they get larger, and you just do such a great job of reporting and focusing on the growth in Detroit, which is really going to mean magic into the future. So thank you so much for being on the show, and God bless you.
Thank you so much, John. God bless you, and best of luck to everything.
Okay. Well, I'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to the Butterfly Moment. Be inspired. Go Lions, and go D business. All right. Take care. Love you guys.